This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Back of the Nest preview podcast and joint match report for the third week running. We will be sadly taking a look back to our very disappointing result at Elland Road, not the victory as I predicted last week, and looking ahead to the visit of Burnley to Selhurst Park, where Crystal Palace will face Sean Dyche's lookalikes.
The match report. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Yes, welcome everyone to the show. Slight change in the lineup this week. Hesketh is out with a cold. Fingers is crossed it's not the dreaded COVID. And Albert, you've returned from the void. Where have you been?
Just busy, mate. Busy.
How's Stiltman the movie looking? Because we heard that's you were talking about working on the new Stiltman movie.
I've signed an NDA, so I'm actually not allowed to talk about it, I'm afraid.
Oh, sad times. We all look forward to it. Hambo, back again.
Yeah. Can't keep me away now, can you?
No, absolutely not. Right, I'm thirsty, so let's do this.
Damn, I'm thirsty. I want a beer. What about you? You want a beer? I'm going to leave you three to it, man.
Oh, I got a brew dog this week. It's called Dogma, and it's a Heather Honey Ale. 7.8%, so Hambo, not quite the 9% of last week.
Why do you do this to yourself? Like, literally, beer above about 3.5% tastes horrible. So what's going on?
Well, when you have to spend an hour to an hour and a half once a week with Albert and Hesketh, it gets me through it.
Wasn't on last week.
Or the week before. I think, yeah. And what's our record like without Albert? Is it similar to Palace's without Zaha?
I think so, yeah. Worse.
What are you drinking, Albert?
Well, not through choice. There was a bit of a mix-up with, I'm sure the hundreds of people who listen to this show and follow me on Instagram will know that there was a bit of a substitution mix-up with the Ocado this week. And instead of getting, I think it was meant to be Pacifico, they've obviously gone, well, this guy likes Mexican beer, so let's send him Desperados.
Oh, mate.
So I'm on a, what's this? I'm on a 5.9% Desperado.
And that comes with extra wig you out value as well. Like that little bit of tequila on the end is definitely going to run.
Yes. Yeah. I'm having flashbacks to when I was like 14 and in France with a keg of Desperados from the what do they call the supermarkets over there? The Supermarché. thinking I was well hard.
Why are you pronouncing it Desperados?
What is it called?
Surely it's not. I thought it was just Desperados, isn't it?
It's got an S on the end.
Is it got an S on the end? Desperado?
Yeah.
It's not an apostrophe S? I don't know. I'm confused.
Somewhere in South London, Hesketh's turning over in his deathbed or whatever he's in at your pronunciation of Supermarché there.
And Vanessa, his wife, is probably livid at how I'm mispronouncing, probably the most Mexican of all the products, Desperados.
Desperados.
How do you pronounce Doritos?
Doritos.
Well, not Doritos, okay. Just checking.
Listen, I'm pretty sure it's called Desperados.
You're probably right.
Doritos sounds decent. Can he play up front? Right. What are we going to start with? Andy Johnson's 40th birthday. 40. Wow. I don't know why I feel like that makes me feel old, even though I'm younger than him, but somehow it does.
Yeah, we're not all younger than him, are we? So.
Well, with all the weight you're dropping, Hambo, you're starting to morph into him a bit.
I know, it's happening, isn't it? I mean, you know, I might actually look my real age soon. You never know.
Any particular Andy Johnson memories that stand out for you in as I say, it's his 40th on the day of recording, of course, it's his 40th.
I mean, so many. I mean, I go back to, I mean, the Brighton 5-0 obviously just sticks out a mile, but I think it was a, you know, similar performance against, was it Walsall, you'll remember?
It was the Tuesday before the 5-0 against Brighton.
Yeah, yeah.
Back-to-back hat-tricks.
Yeah, just sensational stuff. I vividly remember when we got him because it was the first season in a while I'd had a season ticket. I was sitting in the main stand. And obviously we'd lost Clinton and I was massive and still am a massive Clinton fan. I just thought, well, you know, we got this kid who missed a penalty or whatever. And I watched him, and even though, you know, I think we all remember he didn't spark straight away as the striker he was, but it was just the effort straight from sort of minute one that he put in, that, you know, he chased absolutely everything, just incredible pace. And I thought, well, you know, actually this kid's all right. And, you know, I say kid, he's only a couple of years younger than me, but I just thought, you know, we might have something here. And, you know, I always feel very smug about the fact that I was talking to one of my friends who came with me to a game later on in that first season. And I was saying, it's quite a dumb thing to say, and I admit this, but I was saying, you tell me what the difference is between like Michael Owen and this guy. If you stuck him in the same team, had the same players around him, tell me what the difference is. I said, he'll play for England one day. And he did, didn't he? Didn't score for England, but he did play.
Yeah, I'd
for one day, wasn't it?
It might have been.
No, I think he got two in, didn't he? I'm pretty sure there was two friendlies in the same camp, basically. So he just got involved in those. But I had the complete opposite. Early on in his Palace career, was away at Sheffield Wednesday and he hadn't scored yet, or he might have only scored one. I don't even think he'd scored a Palace goal. When he put a header from 6 yards, he hit the post with it when it was easier to score. And I think I might have said this on the pod before. I turned to my mate Dave and said he'll never score goals. And then I think a week later he scored and then did not stop scoring. So whenever I see my friend Dave, he always said, do you remember that time when you said Andy Johnson never scored goals? Don't try and tell me you know about football. So, yeah, but I'm much better. You might, you know, with all the Premier League goals and all the things that came within the promotion season, all of that, you know, it was that hat trick at Walsall followed by the hat trick at Brighton was just unbelievable. What about you, Albert? Any particular Johnson memories?
Overrated. No, I jest, of course. I remember going back to what almost ties in with what you were saying about saying he'd never score goals. I remember a certain Palace message board based website having a picture of Andy Johnson in his early Palace career. And I think the headline was something like, why Andy Johnson will never score goals. And it like they'd zoomed in on his foot and somebody had like photoshopped a golf club on the end of his foot. I don't know which golf club was. It was obviously one that hits the ball high.
Sand wedge, 9-iron.
Mate, definitely. And obviously, again, as your tale told Terence, it kind of wasn't the case. He went on to be amazing and always came across such a nice chap as well.
I thought you'd finish. I was going to say, I love that you're going on that like you don't know what golf is when you've got a driving range in your backyard of your grounds.
Yeah, well, it just came with the house, mate. It was kind of not. I mean, I was walking behind Andy Johnson for a good like hour in the marathon march a couple of years ago, And it's just like it's very strange. I know you've played in a game with him, Terrence, but it's like, oh yes, Andy Johnson. He was like responsible for so many happy occasions in what was, you know, turned out to be a really, you know, it was bittersweet that time, wasn't it? You know, the way we got relegated, and then the drop back down to the Championship. And was it away at Reading when he got absolutely mullered and he was sort of out injured for a while? And, you know, it was kind of bittersweet the way his Palace career ended. Obviously, we got a fair bit of money for him, but always a legend in my eyes.
Yeah, that game you talk of me playing with him was in the Renf game in 2016, and it was... what an unbelievable night. He scored two goals in a 3-2 win when we come back from 2-0 down, and he scored an 87th minute winner. And I kid you not, he celebrated like he'd scored a winner in the Premier League. He ran off to the corner, waved everyone over, got absolutely mobbed. And then for the cameras, as he started running back towards the centre circle, he did the burger celebration. And it was what a moment. And just Sean Derry in that game as well, just how they were both so committed to it and just like did not care that it was completely lowly amateur. They were like, it's Palace against Brighton. We don't fucking lose to Brighton. So yeah. What a great time. I'm sure everyone saw the Sean Dyche press conference last week. So we're playing Burnley this week, so I thought we'd talk about his lookalikes conversation. Hambo, did you see this?
I did, yeah. I rewatched it again today as well, just to remind myself. I'm sure Albert will talk about the comedy chops of Sean Dyche, but you know, it was an interesting diversion, wasn't it? And I have to say, I do know the lookalike game. It's a game that I've played with my friends many, many times. We don't play it in a very nice way, though. You know, we take the thing that each of us are most insecure about, and we find people who, you know, have that same characteristic, and we say, what are you doing over there? And things like that. So, for example, my mate, who's about 5'4", if we ever see very short people, we will say, I'll use his name, Brent, why are you over there as well? Things like that. Myself and my friend Matt are sensitive about our weight. And, we pick the fellow large people and that kind of stuff. So that's how we play that game.
To be honest, I'd be more concerned that my name is Brent.
I mean, it is a problem. I won't say his surname, but it is worse.
Oh dear. We'll keep that one for off air. Albert, what did you think about Sean Dyche's presser? I've seen it, mate.
Overrated. I had to turn it off. Too cringe, sharp, Sean Dyche. And the journalists trying to chip in as well, like they're fucking comedians as well. Thought the whole thing was a disgrace.
It was, I thought it was actually a really good deflection though, because the amount of times Burnley have been absolutely pumped by Man City, he clearly just didn't want to talk about it, because what was he going to say? Yeah, we're probably going to lose 5-0 again, is pretty much the gist of it. So did you come up with any of your own lookalikes?
I mean, the one I remember vividly, and I think I've mentioned it on Back of the Nest before, but was when everybody sang "You're Just a Fat Eddie Murphy" to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed that one.
Fat Eddie Murphy. What about you, Albert?
Well, I remember the aforementioned Crystal Palace message board based fan site did a lookalike section once, and I submitted. And apologies, I don't know the guy's name, but the singer from Offspring was a dead ringer for Aki Rialati at one point, with the bleach blonde sort of spiky hair.
Good shout.
Other than that, I've just got John Terry and an arsehole.
Well, I've got three for Roy Hodgson, so you guys can pick between you who he looks the most like. We've got Al, obviously, the steward at West Brom.
Yeah.
Or Theresa May.
Ooh, that's tricky. I mean, the steward at West Brom was a good one, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
You've just reminded me as well, sorry to, but Louis Van Gaal and Mumma Fratelli from The Goonies.
That's a good one.
Or Beavis or Butthead. I don't know which one it is.
Burnley players. Do you know what James Tarkowski looks like?
No.
Well, it's the FA Cup is the answer, because his lugger was a fucking humongous. And another one, and the last one we'll do is Ashley Barnes. He looks like a cunt. Right.
I've not seen one of those for a while. You have to remind me.
Well, give it a Lawnmower 3.0 and then you'll be able to see it.
I'm not sure that's the ad they're looking for. Maybe it is. I don't know.
I'm more concerned my wife's listening, to be honest.
So what do you want? Do you want to do the ad now, Hambo?
Oh, yeah, I guess I can do, yeah, because that's an interesting...
God, what a great nice smooth segue. Professional segue into our paid sponsorship.
And the thing is... Everything's a lot more smooth these days with Manscaped.
So Go, Hambo. Why? Go.
Okay, the problem is they want us to start with an introduction, which completely sort of derails it from being a segue. But I'll do it anyway. We've got producers to edit around this stuff, haven't we?
They won't.
No, they won't, no. No, absolutely not. Hold on. My neighbour's going to open and shut their door, which would be quite loud.
How do you know that's going to happen?
Because I could hear the creak of the stairs.
I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, it probably will. I think it's all sorted out. Get my composure back, right. Support for Back of the Nest is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Big news! Manscaped just released their new cologne scent to help you feel good and smell good all over at all times. Who knew smelling this good could feel this good too? Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Join the movement for all your below-the-waist grooming needs.
I genuinely like the smell of this.
Oh, the refined cologne.
Well, weirdly, I do kind of smell like my ball sack now, because the smells are made to complement each other. But I genuinely liked it. I was like, oh no, I'm not going to have to talk about on a podcast about a product I really don't like. And then it was like, oh, actually, it's really nice. I'm actually shocked. So fair play to Manscaped and their refined cologne, which is incidentally who Max Meyer plays for now.
In a refined way, as a refined midfielder. We've talked about it a lot on the watch along as well. I've been doing a live spray along on the watch along.
Jesus, what an image.
Just realised what I said there. Thanks, Al, but let's not draw attention to that any more than we need to. But it is. It's a really good smelling cologne. And as you say, it is supposed to match all of their products. But Albert, lot of reaction I got from people I know who listened to the pod about your ad that was on the show last week. And I know, you know, you personally decided that you were you had too many other colognes, and you've basically made a huge mistake because this is the best one. But you can't talk about that, but you can talk about your smooth testicles, right?
I mean, for hours. Listen, I just spoke from the heart, yeah?
And I mean, the potato peeler in the camping tin was a personal highlight. I mean,
not for me.
Those two things together would not even exist in my vocabulary. I just don't understand.
But, you know, we can't speak highly enough of the fact that not only do they sponsor us, and they've you know, this is the second month they've been sponsoring us, and it's hugely appreciated. You know, we've had plenty of listeners use our code BOTN at manscaped.com to get 20% off and free shipping. That's why we've still got this relationship with Manscaped. They sent us all their products. We talk about them because they are good. So everyone knows Manscaped has the perfect package 3.0 for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. But as we say, they haven't stopped there. You can complete your grooming game with the refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped and endorsed by me and Terence. And it's the same signature scent that's in all Manscaped formulas. It's a perfect complement to the collection. It's light, approachable, gentlemanly in all the right ways. Think of it as your wingman for the night to keep you fresh and ready for anything.
In lockdown.
In lockdown. You can still have nights. You know,
yeah, it stopped my missus social distancing from me on the sofa, so she's definitely moved a couple pillows over. So
there we go. So Yeah, last little bit, really, just to describe the scent to you. And I think, Terence, you can tell me if this is accurate, because I think it is. The signature scent, it introduces a light citrus burst.
Hang on, is this beer check?
Terence is at risk of drinking it if you do describe it any further.
I've got to be careful here. It has anchoring notes of vetiver and a woodsy
anchoring, did you just say?
Anchoring, just to be, let me just pronounce that again so it's clear. Anchoring notes of vetiver and a woodsy masculine finish. So there you go, be guilty. Have you got a woodsy masculine finish? That's good. That's good news.
Anytime.
Good news. All right. Let's leave that there. Do be sure to check out. I'm going to retake that bit. Because it's complicated saying all the words.
You have drunk some, by the sounds of it.
It's difficult. Terence did chauffeur earlier on, and none of us picked him up on that. Why are you having to go at me?
Oh, he says desperados.
Oh, God damn it. Right. I'm not even going to say that bit anymore. Let's just get to the main point. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code BOTN at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code BOTN. Look good, smell good, feel good with Manscaped.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Fantime videos, choose your match day squad, post match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So, yeah, obviously Palace lost 2-0 to Leeds United. It's a scoreline that Hesketh stole before I could predict it on the show last time out, and really poor performance from Palace, it has to be said. You know, you never really thought it would be the same story. Well, most of us didn't really think it'd be the same story, apart from you, Terence, who predicted it would be. But I suppose we have to start with the lineup, because it was a bit of a surprise, and not one that I necessarily had a problem with before we started. So Guaita in goal, Klein, Dan, Cahill, Mitchell at the back. So obviously Mitchell coming back into the side. And that enabled the selection of Patrick Van Aanholt at left midfield in a 4-4-2. Eze play starting on the right with Luca and Gyro in the middle. And new boy JP Mateta up top alongside the undroppable Jordan Ayew. I've got my thoughts on that, but I'll start with you, Terence. What did you think when you saw the lineup? First of all, did you expect the 4-4-2 with the players picked? And what did you think about how we set up?
Well, firstly, on Roy, whoever tweeted it from the back of the Nest account saying that he listens to the pod and is deliberately mugging me and Hesketh off by us always saying that he never makes changes and it's always, you know what you're going to get. And then he starts throwing spanners into work all over the place in the last couple of weeks. But no, absolutely. I think everyone thought it was going to be a 4-2-3-1 based on paper, what the formation looks like. Turned out to be a 4-4-2 again with Patrick Van Aanholt on the left of midfield and Ayew going up top alongside Mateta. the guy who interviewed Hodgson before the game said it's going to be a 4-4-2 with Mateta and Ayew. I was like, oh, you're sure of yourself? And then immediately watched Hodgson start to agree with him. And I was like, oh, okay, I understand. We beat them with a 4-4-2 at home. When we beat them 4-1, it worked for us on that day. Perhaps there's something in it, how good a coach Bielsa is, because he tweaked around a bit and made us look a lot more ineffectual, infinitely more ineffectual than we did on that day. But yeah, it was. I'm not a fan. A lot of people have called for Patrick Van Aanholt going into left midfield, and I think he's been lost. He can get lost at left back where he plays all the time. So put him into a position that he doesn't know what he's doing. I'm not surprised he was found wanting, Hambo.
No, definitely not. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that bugged me a little bit. I said before the game, I really enjoyed the fact that we've been a little bit out there, a little bit creative. But, you know, that decision was probably more inexplicable and strange than I thought. But I've got some views on how Roy justified it later on. But I want to get Albert's reaction first before I do that. You know, again, when you saw that lineup, Albert, and you saw PVA at left wing, but you saw Mateta starting as well. How did you feel?
Well, just for the sake of variation, it was refreshing to see something a bit different. I'm not going to lie. I looked at it and thought, that could work. Again, I thought it was going to be a 4-2-3-1 when I saw it, and it quite clearly wasn't. But I'm not going to sit here with hindsight and go, oh, yeah, I thought it was going to be shit. I was quite up for it. I thought Van Aanholt over Townsend was mildly controversial, but again, it reminded me of when I was a runner, when I first got into my sort of career, people would say to me, here's a good tip, but don't tell anybody. Make sure that the coffee and tea that you make is shit, and then people won't ask you to do it again.
When I was so confused because when you said runner,
What the hell are you bullshitting about now?
When I started out as basically at a tea boy, someone says to me, if you make sure your tea and coffee is shit, then nobody will ask you to do it again. And I kind of feel like that's what Roy's done with playing PVA on the left. He's like, even, you know, normally it was like, why don't we play Schlupp and PVA in, you know, people offering up one of those as a wing or one of those as a left back. And I feel like Roy's just done that. And been like, there you go, you had it for 45 minutes. It was crap. It didn't work. I'm never going to do it again. So people can't say that he hasn't tried something different. It didn't really work. I mean, I think we'll delve into it a bit more. I've got a bit of an excuse lined up for why PVA didn't have the greatest 45 minutes that we'll ever see. Mm. It just wasn't very good, was it? That is the short answer,
and that's pretty much. We're going to slightly more detail than that, but frankly, not too much. But I want to just address the comments that Roy had made after the game about the lineup and about the choice that he made, because as Terence said, it looked like it might actually suit a 4-2-3-1 and be a very interesting formation. But Roy, you know, he's basically dismissed that after what was a pretty decent half against Wolves, although we didn't score and didn't create much. He decided that it didn't work and then 4-4-2 is the way we're going to continue to play. So I find that very odd. But he was asked why he selected Van Aanholt, and his reason immediately was talking about how Leeds play. You know, he said Rafinha's been doing really well down that side, which he absolutely has. So, you know, he was all about giving protection on that side of the pitch to Tyreek Mitchell. And, you know, so this is a team you beat 4-1 and who can see lots of goals. And we're going into the game thinking about how dangerous they are and not thinking about the impact of playing a left back and, you know, a terrible one at that at times, but one that had been playing okay at left back for the last two games. Moving him into the left of midfield, sacrificing, you know, attack. And, you know, and then having to correct that mistake by putting a player who was sat on the bench.
I couldn't hear what you said.
My watch is really angry with me.
I don't know if you heard, your watch can hear what you said. Yeah, I mean, I can hear what you're saying.
Yeah, well, I don't know why my watch didn't understand. That's derailed me slightly there, Albert. Do you think? I mean, I've started to...
Well, it's kind of fitting because, you know, PVA so often gets derailed in his positioning. So it's.
But it just, you know, that's the whole point. Is like if he'd said, I was trying to do something different, I was trying to, you know, they've seen how we played. I'm trying to throw them a bit of a curveball and make them think about it. I think Patrick's got some good, you know,
some good ability going forward. You know, could have got at their left back. Sorry, could have got at their right back. All that kind of stuff. I misspoke there, but he did spend quite a lot of time on the right wing as well. So, but you know what I mean? It's if there was some kind of indication that it was about more than just how can we be more defensive against a team we smacked four past last time, I'd have been okay.
Do you know, the whole post-match presser felt like before kickoff, he'd resigned us to losing anyway. It felt like a bit like, no, when we go to Chelsea and he's happy with a 2-0 defeat, that kind of thing. He just kept talking about how we knew it was going to be a difficult game. I knew it was going to be really difficult for Mateta, but I threw him in anyway. I knew this. It just didn't ring of anything of, like you say, we put four past them earlier in the season and we've gone there with the intention of let's try to not lose by more than two goals is just what it felt like.
Yeah, and again, once again, we conceded a goal stupidly early, didn't we? And you talked about it last time out. It's that we hadn't settled against Newcastle. We, again, didn't settle against this team despite the fact we're playing experienced players at the back. No real logic behind it. But, I mean, Albert, what point, you know, did we even try and get back in that game? You know, could you see any moment where it looked like we were going to do something?
At no point did I feel we were going to get back in that game. I mean, I have to say the 4-1 earlier in the season. All right, you can only beat what's in front of you, and the score is the score. But you know, at the time, it was a bit of a generous 4-1. I thought, you know, one of them was a completely random own goal that you probably won't see the likes of anytime soon. You know, everyone's favourite, Patrick Bamford, had a very, very harsh offside call from VAR. You know, and if those two things are slightly different, that game's only 3-2 and it's a different story. So, yeah, it was great to smash them 4-1, but it was always a bit generous. So I'd be wary of saying, well, we rolled them over last time, so we should have gone with the same approach this time. Because obviously they're a bit more experienced and settled in the Premier League than they were then. So I can kind of, I'm not saying I agree with going in and having a defeatist attitude, but I can see why Roy was potentially cautious in his approach. I mean, it doesn't mean I agree with the formation and the lineup necessarily, but we went down a goal early against Newcastle really early on to a worldie. This time it was a bit more, there's a deflection. So, you know, that's a bit more of a rotten luck scenario. But yeah, we didn't kick on and we didn't, yeah, it just, it lacked something. There was poor performances. It was a poor system. And that only leads to a disappointing result.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the slow starts can be put down to Ray Lewington missing. You know, he's the sort of person who's always geeing everyone up all the time. So maybe that's been lacking in the changing room. He's not been fluffing them up, so they're not responding early.
But we've seen it. It's a kind of recurring theme with Palace, and you know, in either poor first halves or poor second halves. Usually poor first halves, and the fact that the management and coaching staff have to get in them and say, you know, what, you know, where's the intensity? Where's the sharpness in the passing? You know, and I'm going to, rather than go into vast amount of detail on the game, I'm just going to use the highlights, if you like, from who scored and how they summarised the game. But there's a couple of things I really want to pick out. But they have a strengths and weaknesses thing. Those of you that are familiar with the site will know what I'm talking about. But if you're not, they simply just look at what the statistics show you about, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of your team. So Leeds finished the game with team has no significant weaknesses, which tells you everything you know need to know about how we play.
Top knots.
Yeah, exactly. That should be in there. The top knots. Jeez. But so Palace were poor at finishing, lost possession often, committed a high number of individual errors. So that's a lovely catalogue of problems there. So in terms of strengths, Palace had one. We're effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from long shot situations.
Were we?
I don't remember that, but I'm guessing if the only shots you have are from outside the box, possibly.
That one Townsend one that went to the keeper, that's the only one I can think of.
There was an IU one in the first half as well, which was pretty tame, but also went directly at the keeper, and that was from just outside the box.
Jordan,
that's
IU.
Pretty much it. So, but Leeds had a whole host of strengths that I won't read out. We're not going to focus on them. But what really stuck out for me, when you start to look at the passing, if you want to think about, you know, are we going overboard? You know, are people just going from one extreme to another after two wins? We saying that this is a worse game than it was. We aren't. The passing was incredible. So our average pass streak was 4, which I thought was 3 passes too high. But we made a total of 347 passes in the whole match to Leeds 743. They had an average pass streak of 7. We hit more long balls than they did, despite the fact that they played over twice the number of passes we did. You know, and mysteriously Benteke doesn't play, and we put 10 crosses in the box as well. So we're doing everything we can possibly do to be as shit as possible, frankly, statistically. That is my statistical summary.
And our best pass of the night was the one that Luca laid on a plate for Bamford.
Absolutely right. Look, I don't, you know, I suppose looking at the first goal, Albert, you talked about it. You're absolutely right. It was a deflection, and it was, you know, one of those things where I don't necessarily look at it and think like I did against Newcastle. Yet again, it's players marking spaces, not closing things down. It was just, you know, they got a bit lucky with a shot from just outside the box, didn't they? And that can happen. I can kind of live with that, but I'll be honest, I've cast the second goal from my memory because it's Bamford, but
Quater made the great save and it bounced into Bamford's pass and he tapped it home. But on Patrick Bamford, did you see his interview after the game?
No, but I heard he came across really well. I was too busy being extremely angry with everything.
He has multiple times this season, and it was in this interview where I think I've changed my opinion of him now a little bit. And where he said he was talking about, you know, Bielsa's not only improved me as a footballer, he's improved me as a person. And he just doesn't seem like that. He come across as such a brat when he was at Palace.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's just not, you know, he is an extremely hard-working centre-forward who is just a million miles from the player we saw at Selhurst, a million miles. And, I think he's harshly done by a lot because of the way he sounds when he speaks, because he's, you know, he just comes across like a right posh boy. But, you know, him actively talking about how Bielsa has improved him as a human as well was quite telling, and it shows in his football. And I think with every passing second of that interview, my any sort of hatred I harboured towards him slowly drifted off.
I mean, yeah. Look, go on, Hambo.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, the problem I always had with him was he, you know, at Palace, he was, not only was he shit, but he basically said, you know, blamed the club, didn't he, if you like. It was all about him not getting the opportunities, not settling and all this kind of stuff. And he seemed to be really, you know, felt like he kind of deserved more. He'd been the main man at Borough, hadn't he, the season before, and just expected to walk into our team and have it handed to him on a plate. But so, you know, I don't know if I want to like him, but it sounds like he's grown up a bit.
And in terms of the only thing other thing I want to touch on the game is that Leeds were there for the taking in that opening 25 minutes. We turned over the ball so many times in their half, deep in their half, in that opening 25 minutes, and just could not take advantage of it. And I don't know whether that was down to the pitch, which made the final ball a little bit more difficult than it may have been. Our golden boy, Gyro, was actually guilty a couple of times of not picking the right pass, which is very unusual for him. As we've talked about on previous pods, maybe we've jinxed him, who knows. But I think the most infuriating thing about after that opening 25 minutes is if we would have just picked the right pass once there, we could have scored and maybe the game would have been very different. But I think after that, about half hour into the game, we barely laid a glove on them, did we?
No, it was so passive again, wasn't it? I want to, just the last little thing really, I'm trying to pick out positives when I can. And I happen to notice, and I'm going to see if you guys can guess. So in the top player statistics in Europe on who scored, a Palace player does feature. And the categories are aggression, shots per game, dribbles per game, tackles per game, assists, and overall rating. So if you could pick a Palace player to go into any of those categories, who do you think is within the top players in Europe?
Jordan Ayew.
Incorrect. Terence?
They appear in the top what list
top,
of those
top
categories?
Top five players in these categories. I'll do the categories again.
It's the same player who appears in all of them.
No. He's in one of these categories. That doesn't make any difference if your answer was Jordan Ayew. So
Is it Jordan Ayew?
So it could be top five in aggression in Europe, top five in shots per game in Europe, top five in dribbles per game, top five in tackles per game, top five in assists, and top five in ratings in Europe. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, Luka Milivojevic has so many yellow cards this season.
Yeah, in the aggression category.
Okay, are you both going with that because you're wrong?
Interesting. With 11 yellow cards, he's still not in there.
No, although weirdly, I'm looking at the people who are, and I suppose it's combined yellow and red.
Red card's probably worth a few more points.
Yeah, that'd be what it is, because there's 7-2, 9-1, 8-1, 8-1, 5-2. Anyway, so it's tackles per game, and it's in third place, Tyrick Mitchell.
Tyrick Mitchell. I think it's only, AWB's ahead of him and someone from another league.
Jordan Ayew.
It's Abergel, who plays for Lorient, and Rongier, who plays for Marseille.
Oh, okay.
I can't say Desperados.
I was reading an article today on who scored about... I wasn't that in-depth, but I saw Aaron Wan-Bissaka in terms of successful tackles was really high up, so maybe that's more what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Something ironic about you guys trawling through a website called whoscored.com when we definitely didn't score.com in the last game.
I thought that was an insult about my love life for a moment there.
Absolutely. No, but I can do one if you want.
No, it's all right.
Can I just say one thing, if we're about to move on from the Leeds game, one factor that I thought contributed to Patrick Van Aanholt's downfall in that, it's not even in the game, was it? In half a game. I thought Jordan Ayew really fucked up Patrick Van Aanholt in that game. Jordan Ayew seemed to just want to come out to the left wing to get the ball. And I don't know if that was, because he thought Patrick Van Aanholt wasn't doing a good enough job, but Jordan Ayew seemed to come out and just occupy that space at the same time. And when he was on the touchline, credit to him, he was retaining possession. And at times, I think it was the first half, he did like a Yannick Bolasie, managed to like do a drag back and like free himself from like three players tight up against the touchline. But it seemed to me in the first half, he was treading all over. And I'm not saying that Patrick Van Aanholt would have had a good game and wouldn't have gone off at half time. But it just seemed, maybe it's part of the confusion of playing in that position, but it just seemed to me that Ayew and PVA were both trying to play left wing in the first half. And I'm going to use the word clusterfuck. It was an absolute clusterfuck.
I'll tell you who else had a pretty good drag back in that game. Gary Cahill, after getting utterly embarrassed. He's some player, Rafinha, isn't he?
Yeah, I was quite jealous watching him play, to be honest with you.
His weight of passing. I just really wanted to hear the commentators talk about his weight of passing a bit more. That and Patrick Bamford's torment of misery whilst at Crystal Palace. I don't think they talked about that enough either.
Because that was a line in the commentary for the goal, wasn't it? It was the worst time of his life. It wasn't that bad, was it? But I actually felt like the commentators did a better job not wanking all over Leeds in that game. I thought they toned it down a bit, to be honest.
Well, obviously I didn't hear the commentary doing the watch along, and it's obvious you guys didn't watch along with us. So can I just gloss over that? And you also say that it wasn't the worst time of Patrick's life when he was at Palace, but it was the worst time of my life. I was going to ask, how do we feel about Roy in versus Roy out now? But there's plenty of time to do that in the rest of the season. So let's do some previewing then, Terence.
Yeah, so... straight off the back of this, if we go into Burnley and, you know, we'd had a pretty good run against Burnley up until a couple of games ago where we seemed to beat them at will. I think we might have strung five wins on the trot against them, but 2-1-0 losses in recent games. Hambo, the first stat that jumps off the page is they have failed to score in 7 of their last 9 away games.
Well, we know how that's going to go, don't we?
Yeah, sorry, I'm queuing you up with all the Hesketh questions here.
Yeah, well, he wanted somebody to moan, and I can do that for you. We are guaranteed to concede in the opening 5 minutes, aren't we? Let's face it. You know, I don't even know where to start really with what we're going to do defensively. I don't see us getting any players back. And we're there to exploit and bully. The only thing you can possibly think of is that maybe they don't have the type of forward players that Gary Cahill is going to lose quite so regularly. But hey, who knows?
Yeah, well, their strengths on who scored, I believe it was aerial duels, which we've not been great at, particularly Gary Cahill. You know, with our set piece statistics this season, kind of Burnley are the worst opposition we really want to be playing at the moment. I mean, Albert, even in the Leeds game, Leeds, who I talked about on the pod last week, are no danger from set pieces. They just don't score them. And the ones they do score tend to be direct free kicks. They look like they was going to score from every corner against us. So how do you think we're going to fare against the likes of Tarkowski and me and Chris Wood in this one?
Leeds looked like they were going to score from our corners.
Yeah, fair point.
How are we going to? When you said how are we going to get on against me, I thought you were shaping up for a game of the weekend. It really threw me. You listen, it's going to be a war of attrition. It's not going to be a pretty game, however we shake it. And we need to be more resilient at set pieces. You know, do you remember that time when we were so fucking good at defending set pieces, like 2 seasons ago? We really need to get some of that back because we look very, very soft from anything that resembles a long ball into our area at the moment.
Remember Tony Pulis, we only conceded 1, and that was in the final home game of the season against Liverpool. That was the only set piece we conceded from.
He used to dish out the old fines, didn't he, for losing a man at a set piece?
Do you get a double fine for losing Joe Allen? In the penalty area.
It's a fine or a naked headbutt. You choose.
Naked headbutt with the baseball cap on, though.
Yeah, fair enough. At least it draws the eye.
Do you think he'd turn the peak of the baseball cap backwards before he headbutted you, or just plowed a peak through you and then the head?
No, I think him, he looks at wearing a baseball cap backwards as a bit too jazzy.
So he just puts the peak straight through you before the head. Okay,
yeah, fair enough. He absolutely scalps you with the peak of the cap and follows through with the glasses.
Now, talking about things that you can't get enough of commentators saying is, of course, Wilfried Zaha is most likely to be out for what's going to be weeks, pushing months now, I would imagine, by the sounds of things with the injury. And, of course, the stat always comes up about how performances in recent seasons without Zaha and Hambo, it's lost 18 of our last 23. And I think it's 15 or 16 of those now we haven't scored in either.
Fine margins.
Now, Leeds, we was obviously dreadful in, but
yeah,
I saw a couple of tweets knocking around like this saying that sometimes we are that awful as well with Zaha in the team. So it's not particularly a Zaha problem and an elite performance.
Fucking hell. Yeah.
But there is obviously a trend there with us without Zaha being shit. So how do we make this different against Burnley? What can we do?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, you certainly, if you look at the Leeds game, one of the biggest problems caused by Zaha's absence wasn't necessarily the quality he brings on the ball, because like you say, he can have bad games and we can be terrible. But what it enabled Leeds to do was to basically take Eze out of the game. We didn't really talk too much about it, but Eze didn't have a very good game. You know, misplaced a hell of a lot of passes, really struggled to get any space, and when he did, there were no options for him. And that is basically what happens when Wilf isn't in the team. The movement in the team is basically gone. You know, the bit of magic that Roy likes to rely upon You know, keep it tight, bit of magic. We're failing to keep it tight, and now we haven't got the bit of magic. So, you know, it does need some creative thinking. It, perhaps not on the Patrick Van Aanholt plays left wing scale, but it does need some kind of a shake-up. And I thought we saw that, and we saw enough of the 4-2-3-1 that we might have a chance of doing that. Now, obviously, Zaha played in that, and we perhaps wouldn't create enough. But I think that extra body in midfield is what it's all about. Getting, as a centrally with a couple of anchor points behind him, I said anchor, and, you know, then that allows you to bring, you know, Townsend on the side. You can move Jordan Ayew out to the side. You can have Mateta or Benteke as a focal point. That to me seems the way to go. You know, don't go like for like against Burnley when we're in terrible form and, you know, and struggling to defend. That'll be it for us without Wilf. We need to change what we do, not just chuck players in to the same system and hope to get a better result when your best player's not there.
So, I mean, I'm scared to second guess Roy now, but I assume we will be matching up 4-4-2 against Burnley as we did at their place, which resulted in them winning 1-0, and we had a lot of chances in that game on paper, but in reality there wasn't really anything that was amazing until very late on, wasn't it? Pope made a great save late on, didn't he? But up until that point there wasn't really much to write home about. But Albert, I can't see him putting the same 4-4-2 out as he's done against Leeds there, because you've got a fancy that Townsend's going to come in for PVA. But Kiarte has now had a couple of games rest. Can you just see him have an opportunity to come back in, or, you know, or do you just think he'll continue with Dan? Because historically he's tended to put Dan in when we played against Burnley to try and deal with the aerial threat.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to play 4-4-2, I can see an argument for bringing Kiarte in to, you know, replace either Dan or Cahill. You know, I'm sure if one of those is going to drop out, it is probably Dan. I can see an argument for Kiarte coming in if we go to a 4-2-3-1, which we won't, so let's not talk about it. But I do fully expect, again, if it's the 4-4-2, I need to see Andros Townsend start, because, I mean, you alluded to it earlier, Terence. You know, if we're going to play either Benteke or Mateta, who just, you know, just looping back to the Leeds game, I don't think he had a bad game. I think he was played as all our sort of strikers are at the moment, very isolated, had to come incredibly deep to get anything near a whiff of the ball, and had some nice touches and, you know, try to link play, but, you know, found himself 30 yards away from the penalty area in doing so. So, you know, he had my sympathy there. So again, yeah, I can see an argument for those changes. I mean, I don't like the 4-4-2 at all. But if it has to be the 4-4-2, then I'm less worried about who plays centre half and more concerned about who plays out wide, because you can't do PVA again based on Monday night's experiment.
Yeah, absolutely. I just can't see how Townsend doesn't come back into the team. Hambo, the next question, I guess, is what front two we go with. So when we lost 1-0 at Turf Moor this season, it was Ayew and Batshuayi started that game. And played the first 76 minutes with each other, and obviously there was no joy there. So I assume Roy will look back at that and it rules that two out as a pairing. So do you think it continues with Mateta and Ayew? Does it continue as Mateta and Ayew, or do you think he gives Mateta a chance with someone else, or do you see it Ayew moving back out to the left and Townsend not actually getting in at all and someone else coming in? I mean, he's got options, but I think we all know what it's probably going to be.
Yeah, look, I mean, I laughed because, you know, it's the idea that Roy wouldn't try something that didn't work. You know, if it suited him, he'll just do what he wants to.
Trust the process.
Yeah, exactly. Trust the process. Respect the occasional point. There's a difference between what I think will happen and what I would like to see. You know, what I'd like to see is, I don't feel that we're in danger of getting relegated right this season. So I think Mateta pretty much every game till the end of the year, and see what we've got. And other, you know, that he's going to need so much time and so many minutes to adjust. I just think it's right to keep him in that side. Who plays with him? You know, I'm not feeling Jordan Ayew as a striker this year, and neither is he by the looks of things. So, you know, and the
like, he has a good relationship with the ground at the moment, doesn't he?
Yeah, he absolutely does. Yeah, yeah. Let's be fair. But you know, I know Roy values the work rate because, and I know that because Roy says it every single time he plays Jordan Ayew. So, you know, and I know I'm negative and I'm cynical and I'm doing the Heskers role, but it is so frustrating. You know, to me, let's do something different, and especially if we're going to go 4-4-2. Bung the two big men up there, right? Benteke and Mateta together. Mateta's more mobile. Benteke hold the ball up. You know, you've got that little bit of unpredictability in what Mateta can do. You know, little flicks here and there, that kind of stuff. He's got to get up to the pace of it. Benteke seems to be out of favour, I assume, because of the contract situation, and we're just kind of letting him drift out of the team now. And then, yeah, stick Towns in one side, stick Ayew the other side, and just go for it like that. That's what I would go with. But I expect to see Jordan Ayew start up top. I probably think the Mateta experiment will be over for a couple of games at the very least. And I expect, you know, maybe Batshuayi alongside there. But who knows, maybe PVA will be up front this week.
Yeah, I imagine Sean Dyche looks at our squad and just can't imagine why we're not playing Townsend on one flank, Zaha on the other, and just putting crosses into the big two up top. I'm sure that's what we have. But one thing that did surprise me with Mateta, it was for his size, I assumed he was a bit of a different player than he actually is, that he was trying to get in behind a lot. That was where he wanted the ball. And I think a couple of times that's what confused our midfielders, that he's want to run in behind versus coming short and holding it with his back to play.
There's somebody running towards their goal. What's going on?
Well, exactly. That's probably why the Mateta experiment is over, as Hambo just said, because how dare you run towards goal and try and make things happen. But obviously we could. But it'll be really interesting to see which two he goes with up top. I hope Mateta stays in, as you say, Hambo. I think if Benteke is on his way out, which he most likely is, or, you know, he's going to be signing a contract at a very reduced rate, again, with an eye of just trying to get rid of him to get a transfer fee for him or whatever. Mateta's supposed to be the future, right? We've signed him for what's going to be big money in the end, I imagine, and, you know, try and get the best out of him and see what happens. But, I mean, I also want to say it's about time Batshuayi stepped up and done something, but I still don't know how I feel for Batshuayi. If I should be feeling sorry for him, if I should be expecting him to do more, I don't know. But I think he's been handled relatively badly this season by Roy, and he's a goal scorer.
You feel sorry for any striker, don't you, under Roy? But
the striker graveyard, as I call it, the place that strikers come to die.
And that's why I think Mateta and Batshuayi should start. I think I think that's the obvious choice. You know, who's the last striker to score a goal for Crystal Palace?
Mishu, isn't it? Yeah.
That's literally where we're at, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. It's like, well, I guess you scored the last one, so yeah, fuck it. You get the place and you're the new guy. And as Terence says, he's meant to be the future. All our hopes are pinned on him. So fuck it, play those two.
Yeah, okay. Well, we can just drop into some predictions now, I guess. I mean, talking of who scored, Hambo, it said within a few lines of each other, Crystal Palace will score from a wing play situation was a likely scenario.
Really?
Followed by predicting a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, that's the kind of consistency I like to see from who scored. I don't see it, you know. If Benteke plays and we cross to him, I see it, but I don't see that happening. Look, I've got to say, I think we are low on confidence, massively low on confidence. We're playing a really organised team, so I can't see anything else other than a Palace nil here. The question is whether or not we can keep it as a Burnley nil, and I don't think we will. I feel a Burnley 1-0 win coming up. Now we've got some weird silence with two people on mute and me talking.
It's a dramatic pause there from Tim.
Yeah. Albert, what do you fancy? we'll just carry on like nothing happened.
I fancy hearing you talk.
which makes a change.
Yeah, true. Desperate times, mate. As Terence says, as the Hambo says, we're low on confidence. I wasn't going to say 1-0 Burnley, but now Hambo's explained it, it's abundantly clear that that's what it's going to be. So I will try and lift the mood, but ever so slightly, by saying it will be a delightful 1-1.
Yeah, I'm going to be optimistic and say 1-0 Palace, just because we need it from some, we need it from somewhere. Again, though, I just I've said it a few times intermittently across pods, it just feels ridiculous that we have as many points as we do at this stage of the season, and we all seem in such miserable mood. But here we are. So, Hambo, the match report on the weekend, talking about what is going to be this rip-roaring game, one for the neutrals everywhere. Who's on the match report and when you're doing it?
Who's on the match report and when we're doing it? Well, as everybody knows, as every old romantic knows, it's, of course, Valentine's Day on Sunday, and Sunday is usually the day of recording.
So you'll be on it then?
So I'll be on it. Genuinely have something to do this year. So I will, yeah, so we'll either be recording on the Saturday night, or might have to push it to the Monday. But it'll be whoever the hell is available. Hopefully some of the usual candidates, you know, Mike, DR maybe, you never know, he might make an appearance. Alex Ponge, you know, he's occasionally about, isn't he, old Ponge? Chris Clark, you know, you never know. Who do people want? Send an email to hi@backofthenest.com. Tell me who you want. And don't
just
say
put a vote on Twitter every week about
don't,
who.
And guys, don't all say me, because it just gets embarrassing.
I mean, there's an annoying amount of truth in that as well. So, yeah. All right.
I mean, I can't wait till the pandemic's over and we can start recording podcasts again in the back of cars.
Oh, don't you just miss that? I mean, there was a time we recorded a podcast and then was so late that I had to drive in an interesting way. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, that was when you dropped me off at Croydon Station and parked up on the tram line.
I did park on the tram line, and there was a very angry tram driver, wasn't there,
particularly because you were facing the wrong way as well. You were driving the wrong way.
And that was shortly after dropping me off at Chessington World of Adventures.
Absolutely.
At 1 a.m.
Desperate to go to the Bubble Works, which inconvenienced everybody else, but fine, we did it. And then, then I decided to play chicken with the tram. So good time. It's a good time. But that's the kind of crazy stuff that I really miss.
Yeah, just being able to get a KFC is what I miss. There you go. Right, anyway, so thanks everyone for listening. Thank you to Hambo and Albert for joining. Get well soon, Hesketh. We hope you're back on next week. And look out for the match report on the way.
I like Hambo.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this now. Will Hesketh host the match report, do you think? And I can come and do this all the time.
God, could you imagine how that would go?
I'd have to imagine it, because I wouldn't fucking listen.
Yeah, well, so look out for the match report after this game on the weekend, and we will be back next week, I assume. It's the, oh God, fear of dread of losing game coming up. It's going to be Brighton, and we'll see how Burnley goes on the weekend to see how we feel about going into that one. So until next week, up the Palace.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by pitchdmm.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.